You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters Live. Every episode of Table Talk features visionaries from across the food industry, digging deep into the latest innovations and the big ideas that are set to change our food world. And today's episode continues our series of conversations about careers in the industry. This time, we're finding out the secrets behind the world of food communications, and we'll discover how Roundtree's randoms got their name from the person who came up with it. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a broadcaster and a gastronaut. Now, working in the food industry is exciting and challenging stuff. Every day brings new adventures and a few careers which inspire such passionate individuals as those who work in food. But most people think that chefs or front of house staff are the people, when they talk about their favourite restaurant or meal, who do the work. But of course, we know better. Behind every plate of food, there are many more exciting jobs. For instance, someone has to be responsible for telling the story behind the brands and their ingredients. And that's what my guests are going to talk about today. We have Sophie Kaplan, who is a taste and wellbeing communications specialist at Givaudan, a flavour and fragrance manufacturer. Hello there, Sophie.
Hi, Stefan.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we've got Alex Reary. She is a director at The Collaborators, a brand agency who specialise in food and drink. Hey there, Alex.
Hello.
Now, I'm really excited to find out what you both do and how you got your first start in the industry. But first of all, I'd like to find out about you and how you tick. So starting with you, Sophie, tell me about your dream dinner party. So who would you invite and what would you cook?
One of my biggest passions is cooking. And I absolutely love throwing dinner parties, and I do it quite often. I live a mostly plant-based life and plant-based diet. So my favourite thing to do is veganise recipes. And I especially like to do that for the die-hard meat eaters who don't usually eat veggie or vegan food. I don't often tell them it's vegan. And then, you know, when they tell me it's delicious, I then go in and say, well, it's completely plant-based.
Crafty.
Yeah, at a dinner party, I would cook a hearty vegan curry. My go-to is a dal with all the trimmings. So, you know, homemade chapati, chutneys with the poppadoms. So who would I invite? I would like to invite the movers and shakers in the plant-based world. So, you know, the people that are doing 3D meat printing and cultured meat. I'd love to learn more about that. I'm really into that part of the industry. And a few of the marketing guys from some of my favorite brands. So Oatly, the oat milk company, and Just Egg, the vegan egg. I think their marketing is just spot on and hilarious. And I think they'll be great fun at dinner party.
I think you're right. I think it'd be good. And also, dal is one of those things that, you know, it sounds something really simple and flavours that are really simple, but it can be absolutely extraordinary. Black dal, oh my Lord.
And it takes hours to cook too, but it's worth it.
That's part of the fun, though. Part of the fun, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay, Alex, your dream dinner party, who would you invite and what would you cook?
I love this question because I actually haven't been asked it before. So I think I'd like to go for it. I'd love a party. It's not going to be small scale. It's definitely going to be, you know, kind of all singing, all dancing. And I think, who am I going to bring that represents a bit of what I like, what I'm into? And I thought I'm going to have a feminist perspective here. I'd like Maya Angelou and Dame Steve Shirley, who's the Kinder transport entrepreneur, philanthropist. I think they're amazing women, really inspiring. Then I think from the world of food and drink, I would have to have Queen Jancis Robinson, another pioneering woman in the world of wine.
Absolutely.
For one thing, she's going to bring a brilliant bottle, isn't she? So you're just going to get something pretty exceptional from her. And I love Andy Oliver. So I just think she's awesome. So I'd love her. And then from a creative perspective, it would probably be Alexander McQueen and Thomas Heatherwick.
You're not asking much, are you?
No, I know. I've got quite high expectations here.
Yeah, damn right.
I just feel like they, you know, how they push boundaries, I just want to pick their brains. Then I've got people that I just love, which is Michael Caine, actor, not chef. He's just like all-time legend. Jennifer Saunders. And then probably David Beckham. And I don't think I need to explain that one.
And what are you going to eat?
So for me, it's about informality, everyone getting stuck in, having a good time, lots of kind of sharing stuff. So I love doing, and things that I can prep ahead and therefore be part of the party. So I love things like cochinita pibil. So really beautiful, slow roast, Mexican pork, tacos, and black beans, like really nice sort of sharing stuff. And I also love it because you can make a veggie or vegan version really easily. So like you can do it with jackfruit, for example. And so everyone feels part of that same vibe. And then, of course, I would wash it all down with bucket loads of margarita.
And not the wine. Okay, well, Jancis has brought the wine already.
So yeah, that would be my ideal party.
Excellent. Okay, so now, Sophie, I would hope, and I'm sure, that your meal would smell and taste exceptional. So tell us all about the work behind your job title, which is Taste and Wellbeing Communication Specialist. What does that mean, and what do you do?
So in the Europe Taste and Wellbeing Communications team, we work with the different segments in Givaudan, and that includes savoury, sweet goods and dairy, beverages and snacks, and functional and nutritional ingredients. So, you know, it covers a lot of areas, all the different areas of food. We work with our stakeholders to develop strategic communication campaigns to support their key topics and product solution rollouts. So they might have a solution or a product that they are rolling out, which our sales teams will go and sell. And then we will help them communicate that to the wider world. So this can look very different. It's a very varied role, which is very interesting. So it could be, you know, a targeted social media campaign. We have a really cool consumer insights team who do a lot of research, you know, to back up the solutions and products that we are promoting. So we create, you know, really cool consumer insight brochures. We also get involved in video photo shoot planning. We would do work on podcasts. We've worked with you before on some podcasts. Mm-hmm. We organize webinars, events. We do media interviews, you know, email communication, a lot of thought leadership. And it also obviously includes a lot of content development. So, you know, I get to develop content on all the different areas. Sometimes it could be about plant-based chicken. The next day it could be about low and no alcohol, which is something I'm working on at the moment. So we like to stay on top of the latest digital communication trends to get the best results from our campaigns. And ultimately, the aim is to generate revenue. You know, we are a business partner and the campaigns do generate revenue as well. So every topic and campaign is different. There's not one size fits all and they don't all look the same. But it keeps it really, really interesting and varied. And it's one of the main reasons that I love this role.
Yeah. Now, I was a linguist. I did languages at language only one, the English at uni, and I'm fascinated by what you do because what you're doing is you're using tools which are language words to explain something that is so remote from language, which is sensory perception, and I think that's really difficult as well as being really exciting. When I write a piece about food, it's a real struggle to begin with, and then you suddenly click and you go, okay, this is the way I'm going to do it, and it's about grabbing sort of tools from lots of different aspects to try and refer to something that is really difficult to explain. Do you find that? It's an uphill struggle sometimes, just trying to get the words to make something really get the point across.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, you know, a language of food that's, you know, that's and also quite different depending on what segment we're working on or what campaign we're working on. But sometimes a campaign might be focused on taste, but, you know, sometimes it might be focused on a sense solution such as colour or texture. Or it may be focused on well-being, such as, you know, a health or nutrition topic. So, you know, because it's very hard to learn all the language and all those various segments. So what we really try to do is become experts on that, on the one topic we're working on. I mean, we're always working on more, but on the topics we're working on at the time. Mm-hmm. So we're really involved from the get-go. So in the initial internal rollout, we want to learn everything that the sales guys know, everything that the marketing guys know, and the flavorists. You know, we really want to become experts on that topic. So it's important we understand it and we learn from a strategic business partners. Personally, I read up on it. I might listen to some podcasts. I might watch videos or read some white papers. And then that makes it a little bit easier to, you know, speak the language that resonates with our customers and potential customers. Mm. So we have a lot of consumer insights, knowledge at Givaudan. And, you know, at the end of the day, everyone is a consumer. So, you know, understanding what the consumer is speaking about, what is trending, you know, also social media listening tools, really understanding the topic that we're working on at that moment, including, you know, future trends, the trending flavors, trending topics, that makes it really, you know, that makes it much easier to speak the language of food. And also it's really, really interesting to, you know, it's interesting to learn about how you speak about food.
Yeah, the food argot. Yeah.
Yeah, we also have flavorists who, you know, there's also very technical ways to talk about food. So sometimes we might need to speak to our flavorists and really understand, you know, understand their language, just so we really understand, the campaign we're working on at that time.
I think it's absolutely fascinating. And also, if there are any students listening, what I love about the food industry is you can be a linguist, but be in the food industry. You know, you can be fascinated by language. And as you say, it's not just about, you know, all the Shakespeare and the flipping Anglo-Saxon I had to learn when I was at uni, but also it is about how people communicate on social media as well. So even Instagram is a tool for you, which is absolutely fascinating. Okay, Alex.
I was just going to say, I think there's also something really interesting as well in communications is about taking that technical language and making it consumer friendly. You find that with, especially in wine and spirits, where people go off on one about like just using words that people don't understand, and it's not very effective, you know? So it's important to be that conduit between the geek speak and reality and how normal people speak.
Well, that's what's really interesting. Now, I know that you're also a wine expert, and I think that's interesting as well, because, you know, talking about wine is partly a game of smoke and mirrors. You know, I know a fair few TV wine presenters, and they are full of but that's what's great about them is that they embody the excitement about a particular wine. They might be talking complete nonsense. It doesn't really matter. They've got their poetic turn of phrase might work. Is that all just marketing? Is it just finding different ways of telling the story?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You know, there's that thing that people say that people buy people, you know, and I think that's the thing. It's the stories, the energy. That's why I was drawn to this industry, because the people that are producing amazing food and drink are passionate about it. They do go into that little kind of world of their own, where they're just, you know, it's them and their baby, and it's like, you know, that they wax lyrical about it, and that's amazing. The knack of marketing is being able to translate all of that energy from them into a bit of a soundbite, really, and that is a challenge, but that's part of why it's really exciting, because if you've got a great story to start with, it's a lot easier.
Now, you're a director at The Collaborators. It's a brand agency. Can you explain to us, what is a brand agency? What do they do? And what would a brand agency's dream project be?
All branding agencies have their own little nuance and difference. But ultimately, people produce products. But brands are a kind of value systems around that. So it's kind of, qualities that you want your product to be associated with beyond the functional attributes, if you like. And so for us, and especially this day and age, I think, you know, the sort of materialistic desire for stuff is on the decline, and more so people are interested in values and beliefs, and they want their brands to stand for something and to show who they are as people. So it used to be like, I've got a really big logo on my handbag, therefore, you know, I look cool. But actually, you know, and I think there's an element of that still with branding, but actually the values in that represents, which hopefully these days is more about doing something better for the planet or for the people on this planet, you know, that's more important. And as a branding agency, for us, it's about trying to uncover what that is, what's the reason for being for this product to exist. Why should someone care about this product, especially when it's so competitive? Because, you know, for example, there's loads of snack brands out there. So how do you choose? You choose the one that speaks to you emotionally. And so for us, that's really what it is getting to the heart of it, making sure it's founded on something real. Like, you don't want to pretend to be something that you're not as a brand. That's really important, that it's authentic. And also making what you do really well as a brand, like, connect with people. So it's identifying what people are looking for and finding that opportunity. So it's kind of a combination of all those things. And then it's about bringing that to life visually, however the brand might manifest itself, which is often packaging, website, social media, merchandise, you know, at events. So it's then... What's the visual palette that the brand communicates what it stands for. So that's kind of a bit of a long-winded way of saying it.
No, that's pretty good. So I mean, I think it's interesting that it's evolved.
Yeah, I guess it's evolved slightly in the sense that some brand or design agencies just do design and they do pretty pictures. But for us at The Collaborators, it's very much about meaningful design. So, and brand, you know, is at the heart. But the dream job for me is definitely, it has to involve alcohol, I'm afraid. But yeah, it well, because that's, you know, that's where my passion is. I love, to be fair, I love food as well, but drink is where it's at for me. And so but we want to work with people that want to give something back and want to change for the better, you know. And that could be to do with the planet, it could be to do with communities, but it could be to do with a category, you know. So you look at, like, you know, Oatly, for example. That's about creating choice and better options within a category. And I think, you know, and giving people who can't, I don't want to drink milk, an option. So I think, you know, anything that's a positive contribution is what my dream project would be.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think, you know, in the past you used to be able to just come up with a jingle, you know, for Mash Get Smash. That doesn't work anymore, does it? You as you say, you've got to have a story. So Alex, let's talk about you moving into this area. Was there a single moment that prompted your move to branding and communications, or did this creep up on you? Did you just find yourself there, or did you make a jump into it?
It's kind of interesting, actually. I always liked art, and I liked business studies, and I was kind of, you know, what do I do? And then I saw this course called Advertising, Media and Marketing at university, and I thought, oh, that sounds quite broad and sort of, but covers off the bases that I'm broadly interested in. And then it moved into, they changed the course actually, then it became creative advertising. And at the time I'd like obviously played up the art side of my CV or my, you know, my studies. And so they put me on this creative advertising course, which I then realised I wasn't quite creative enough for. And kind of went, oh, this isn't quite for me. But I liked the idea of it. And they were doing this advertising management course alongside it. So I switched courses. And then actually, so I sort of fell into it, really, where it was this advertising world, and started my career advertising cars. And then kind of progressed, moved into branding, where I started working on food and drink. And once you start getting into that world, if you visit factories, they're fascinating. They're really, really mesmerizing places, like food factories. And at the time I was working on bigger clients, so I was going to factories doing these things, found it really fascinating. And then, and so you kind of, I had this personal passion for wine and spirits, and I studied wine. So I did my Wine and Spirit Education Trust studies and moved my way up. And then that made me more credible in front of drinks clients. So I started working on drinks clients. And then you start talking to distillers and, you know, like getting to the people that are making the stuff, and it becomes even more fascinating. So it sort of, you know, I gravitated towards it, and it was sort of luck, I guess. But, you know, I have worked on financial advertising, and that's pretty boring. So I'm glad that it's happened this way around. You know, I'm sure people love it, but it's just not for me. So yeah, it's sort of happenstance, I guess.
Okay. And Sophie, is it the same for you? I mean, I think Alex was sort of mentioning one of my mesmerizing moments, which was, you know, watching Play School, and they used to go into the round window, and whenever they filmed a food factory and there were bottles on a line going around, I'd be, wow, and just stare at it for ages. Was there a moment of revelation for you, or did you sort of find yourself in the industry because it made sense?
I think I have a lot of similar experiences to Alex, starting off in another kind of communication and, you know, really being drawn to the food side. So I would say that I'm like a typical millennial, you know, the stereotype, like we need a purpose, have to be passionate about what we do. I know everyone does, but, you know, that's like the stereotypical millennial. And I've always been passionate about food. And, you know, Givaudan was a company that I regularly just checked the job board of because, you know, I was interested in it before I actually had this position. So I held various roles in digital marketing and communications previously. but it was in areas that weren't really aligned with my personal values. Like, I'd worked at, you know, a consulting firm, again, kind of in finance. And like Alex said, it was boring, let's be honest. It was boring. And during my time at university and afterwards, I actually had a personal food blog, and I wrote up healthy recipes, and it became quite successful. I wouldn't say I was an influencer, but, you know, a few companies had sent me some products to review, food items. So I did a few reviews, and I went to restaurants that I liked and I'd write some reviews. So I've always been interested in food. So that's why I kept an eye on the kind of companies in the food industry that I could apply for. And I was, the second I saw this job, I just applied. I was like, I need to be one of the first to apply. So when I saw this job, I just thought, oh, this is my dream job. And I applied straight away. So I think, yeah, content creation and good writing skills are really important in my role. And I actually set my food blog, I used as example of my writing. So even though I hadn't worked in the food industry before, I think the passion for food, and, you know, that was clear from my blog, actually really helped and came through. I really wanted to work for a company that aligned with my personal values. And this company, you know, Givaudan ticks every box for me. It's got a strong focus on sustainability. I get to do a lot of work in the plant-based space. And then recently, when it was announced that, you know, we were on the journey to become B Corp company, that just, you know, I felt really proud. And I just, you know, I think it's really important to work for a company where your values align with the company's values. That's really nice.
Now, if you're thinking about starting a career in food or about your next move in the industry, then a good place to start is Food Matters Career Week. From the 23rd to the 25th of November, Food Matters are bringing together students and recent graduates with top global food and drink companies and experts for an exciting, packed agenda on careers, tips and skills. Go to the Food Matters Live website for more information, and it could be the first step to getting a job that you love. Okay, back to Sophie and Alex to find out how they got the jobs they love in the industry. So when, for me, I wasn't part of the food industry at all. I thought I wanted to be a TV director or a filmmaker. And there was just one day when I started writing something. I was writing something all the time. There was one day that I just started writing. I thought I'd write the anti-recipe because I was bored of all the food writing out there. And it was like a lightning bolt hit me of, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing, but suddenly I'm enjoying this more than anything else on the planet. And the same, so you sort of started writing a food blog. I started sort of just writing, just because I wrote and I started writing about food. What sort of tips would you give for listeners who are interested in this area? Do you need to be proactive, or do you need to study? What's the most important thing? Well, there are lots of important things, I guess, but what sort of tips would you offer people who are looking towards this industry?
Well, I also studied, I was linguistic at university as well. I studied English language and linguistics, but my main piece of advice would be to make content about what you enjoy. So I do consume a lot of food-related content as well, personally. I'm listening to a podcast at the moment called Spilled Milk, and it's two journalists, and they're both comedians, and they discuss a different food item each week. They've got like 500 episodes, and they're like 30 minutes to an hour on one food item. It can even be a sauce, and they discuss the tastes, but also their personal stories and experiences. They often talk about their childhood experience and their first experience with this food. They describe, you know, the food in a story-like way, which really like brings it to life. And I think food and taste is a very personal experience. At the end of the day, as I said before, everyone is a consumer of food and beverages. And I think it's important to share your own experiences, specifically what you're passionate about. So for me, it was, you know, healthy recipes. But for someone else, it might be a baking blog. It might be a blog about veganism or even barbecue. I just think really writing about what you're passionate about is key and will come across to the reader. And I'm sure we've all experienced having, you know, there are times in every job where you have to write, you know, you have to work on something that isn't so exciting. You know, you've been there when you're writing, for example, about finance or, you know, a consulting, which wasn't my area. There's just something so different about writing about what you enjoy. And when you get to do what you're passionate about in your job as well, then you're always going to, you know, succeed and just be happy and content in your role.
Yeah. So, Alex, do you think the same thing? Do you think that sort of writing is a muscle that needs to be sort of exercised to strengthen it? Is it good to get going, or does it not really matter? Do you think that studying a subject that is kind of germane to food communication?
I think with all things, you get better the more you practice. So I would say that if writing is something you're interested in, then do it. I think Sophie's right, write about stuff that you're passionate about, but actually there's also something quite interesting about the challenge of finding the interesting angle or the hook on something that you might not be interested in. And I think sometimes setting yourself that challenge is quite good because you learn to love things, you know. So there's beauty in everything. If you find it, you've just got to make the effort.
Yeah. I mean, the jobs industry has suddenly become a very, very different place out there. But do you have any kind of tips for people who are preparing to apply for a job with your company, for instance? If you were looking to take somebody on at the Collaborators, what do you want to hear? I mean, obviously not the words themselves, but what is it that you're looking for that is different from somebody just sort of trotting out their CV?
Well, it's interesting you say that, actually, because we get a lot of people sending their CV to us all the time. I see a lot of them. In my previous agency, it was part of the Ogilvy advertising group, and I used to go through applications for the graduate program. And it is amazing how many people say the same thing over and over again, and it becomes really bland. So I can't tell you how many times I've seen the word passionate, enthusiastic, team player, and it's so easy to fall into that trap. And it just becomes monotonous. I think, in any communications role, in any branding role, ultimately you're there to stand out.
Yeah.
You're trying to stand out in a competitive marketplace. And so a job application is the same. And I just think the way to stand out is you don't have to shout. It's just about finding your point of difference and doing that in a real way. And I was really lucky. I did this leadership, a one-day leadership course with this lady called Charlotte Beers. And she's a bit of a legend in the advertising world. So if you think of Mad Men, she started her career around then. She was like one of the only, women in in that workplace. She really had to kind of know herself. And she had these tips about how you discover who you really are and like to help build confidence. Her thing is that once you know what you're all about, people can't tell you that you can't do those things, that that's not you. And it helps you find your point of difference. And she said, like, it's really involved. Like, when she does this for real, it's like people go to her ranch in, I think it's Texas or somewhere, for a week, and they kind of go into this. So it's not something that you can do very easily. But she said there's things people will say about you. So they'll kind of assign you a role. They'll say, oh, you're the organizer, or you're the peacekeeper, or whatever. So that's one of the bits of like who you are. The other bit is something that you might have inherited from your family, which is kind of either advice or habits that they did that you've picked up, or it could be contrary to that. So for example, for me, my family settle and they kind of put up with stuff, and it used to drive me nuts. So my skill for my family is that, if something's not working, make it happen, change it. So that's kind of my skill from my family.
Yeah,
it's the opposite. It's something that drove me nuts. But and then the final thing was like, what's your inherent skill? What's the thing when you feel most alive that you love, that you're like, that makes you feel kind of good? And again, for me, it's like I love problem solving. It's like, give me a problem, and then that leads into my skill for my parents, which is I'll make it happen, I'll change it. So once you kind of look at those things, you start to know, this is who I am, this is me, and that's what I would then use to make your application stand out, make it different, play up that thing. So that would be my biggest advice, is like, do something that's true to who you are, but that sets you apart. Don't just use the easy, bland words that everybody uses that you expect.
Yeah. I guess the worry, you might worry that that people want to see those words and then something else. But if they didn't see those words, then maybe they don't think I'm passionate. But you got to be confident about it all. I used to staple curly whirlies to my CVs, and it didn't mean I got the job, but I certainly got the interview every time, which was a way of going about
Definitely.
So Sophie, what would you advise somebody who was just graduating and maybe they didn't have a clear idea of the industry? What is it about communications in the food industry that you think they ought to know?
I think it's important to really have an idea of what companies you want to apply for, because we've talked about values quite a lot. You might have values that a certain food company wouldn't align with, and you might think, oh, this is a cool topic, but when you learn more, you're not so keen. So I think it's really important to do research on the company you want to apply for, really understand what their values are. If you're into sustainability, really look at what they're doing to be sustainable, you know, see, look if they do any charity work, really just understand what the company does. And, you know, some big companies, they do get hundreds of applications. So just, you know, Alex's advice was amazing. Like, you know, and it's really hard to stand out if a company is getting hundreds of, you know, hundreds of CVs. So I think just really being, you know, on it with the applications, like the second you see a job, you need to just apply for that job. These jobs get snapped up really quick. You know, people really want to work in this industry. So just, yeah, as soon as you see a job pop up, don't wait till the next day to do it. Just apply for that job. Obviously, for most communications jobs, you do need to have some examples of your writing or examples of previous experience, like any job. So, you know, maybe you don't want to write a food blog. That's probably not for everyone. But I think to have some relevant experience in that field, even if it's personal, even if it was for free, you know, right at university, I sometimes wrote for free magazines just to have, I didn't know what I wanted to do back then, but I would write free articles for magazines, you know, just to really have that as an example. So if you're really passionate about food and want to work in the food industry, then pick something that really excites you, you know, that you can share. Again, like Alex said, that makes you unique. Maybe you have a podcast and you know what, maybe it only has a few hundred listens and it's your friends. But, you know, that really shows your passion. And if that's what you're passionate about, then you need to show that you're passionate about it, because it is easy to write. And I keep saying passionate, but it is really easy to write on your CV, really passionate about food. But, you know, you have to live it. You have to show it, because like Alex said, 100 people who apply for that job are going to say, I'm passionate about food, but everyone eats and everyone loves food. So how is your passion for food different to that? So again, like I also would advise, you know, really to pick the industry that you are passionate about, because that's gonna, you know, that's really gonna be important.
I think you're so right about the research, the company thing though. I think that's so important, because that's another way to stand out, because you can tell the template cut and paste emails, covering note emails a mile off. You know, it's definitely the ones who've thought about it, and it would be the same if I was approaching a new client. You know, how do I want to impress them? I want to show them that I've understood some of their challenges or the things that they might be going through, and like to talk about that. I think that's a really important aspect.
I, like Alex just said, when I was researching Givaudan, in my application cover letter, I definitely mentioned some of the initiatives that Givaudan was working on. And because I'd been following Givaudan for several years, I knew some of the campaigns they'd worked on. And I think that does set you differentiate you from the rest, when you can really show that you've learned, you know about that company.
I just want to drop in to mention a couple of other editions of Table Talk which you might enjoy. We've got one on encouraging diversity in the workplace, one on careers in packaging and the fight for sustainability, and one on food apprenticeships. All of these are on the website. Have a look at foodmatterslive.com. Now, sharing advice is a big part of what you do, isn't it, Alex? You're a mentor at Seed Fund. Can you tell us what Seed Fund is and what it does?
Yeah, so the Seed Fund is a sort of side project that the collaborators set up. So Jane founded the collaborators about 13 years ago now. And initially it was a thing to try to meet younger businesses, you know, startups, because a bit like me, she'd come from a kind of more corporate branding, like big clients, but realised that she really wanted to talk to the producers and work with these smaller businesses. And the Seed Fund was set up as a kind of accelerator programme, completely philanthropic, so we don't make any money from it, but it's there to help young food and drink businesses that are less than 1 million turnover, trying to help them get to the next level. And it's really snowballed over the years. So now it's in association with the Guild of Fine Food. We get you know, hundreds of applications. And it's a bit Dragon's Den, but not quite as intimidating. it's much nicer. You know, we kind of meet some of the people, try their products, speak to them, find out what their ambitions are. There's 12 finalists, basically. And then they get a summer academy of learning where it's different disciplines, all different skills that they might need as owners of young businesses. So some of it might be about the legal side of things, funding, PR and marketing, brand, tone of voice, social media, you know, it's all those kind of aspects, different parts that are helpful. And then at the end of that program, they get to meet some buyers and investors. So that's another, gives them another opportunity to get their brand out there. And we've got incredible industry mentors as well. So people from all aspects of the food and drink industry. And they're there to help offer whatever advice each business needs. And it's all very different. Some are brilliant at their brand and marketing. Some don't know don't know anything about it. So it's a real mix, but it's amazing. It's such a great, great program. Mm.
Now, I was very excited to talk to you. Obviously because it's very exciting to talk to you anyway, but also you came up with a name for Roundtree's Randoms. Come on, we got to talk about this. It's interesting. How important is a name?
Yeah.
Where did it come from? Because I can imagine that coming in a meeting and everyone going, oh, no, it's a bit complicated or it's a bit random. Or and you have to sort of power through with a good idea. How important is the name? Where did it come from?
it came from the client and the strategy. So we had, the client had this ability to make lots of different sweet shapes and in all sorts of, thousands of different forms. And they kind of didn't know what to do with it. They knew that they were kind of missing out to the millennial audience, if you like. So Haribo had really taken that part of the market. And so they were really a bit more kiddie or a bit old, and they haven't quite got that kind of middle ground. So they knew that they wanted to target that audience. So we did various research with millennials, did kind of retail safaris, which was quite fun because you just go and buy stuff and see what they're interested in. And it was very clear that the thing that was interesting to this audience was kind of strange juxtapositions. So sort of funny stories, like the idea that you could take one out of a bag and then make a story with the next one. It's just a bit weird, kind of a bit surreal concept. So that was the basis for it. And we were trying to come up with all sorts of words in it. Like with naming, you go down all sorts of avenues, and one of them is portmanteau. So you put two words together, and the word that I came up with was randomoniums. So it was random mixed with pandemonium.
Yeah.
Which we did actually design on the pack, but it's a lot of letters on a small pack. It's quite long. So it didn't really work. And so somebody was like, what about randoms? And it was like, oh yeah, no, that is actually much better. So we kind of, it worked. So
that's so interesting that something as practical as literally the amount of letters could change the branding. That's what I love about language. You can come up with all these extraordinary ideas and something just doesn't quite work for a reason that's got nothing to do with communication.
Yeah, and it was a lot of syllables to get.
That's a lot of trouble. Now, Alex, are there some core skills that you think people need to do well in communications and branding in the food industry?
I think that there's obviously creativity is at the heart of it. So it's a creative industry. It's about trying to take some often things that are quite functional and to elevate them, to make them interesting. And creativity is a really good way of doing that. But it's not the only thing. I think especially from an agency and a branding perspective, there are so many different skills that require different roles within the agency that require different skills. We have really techie people, they generally gravitate to production and artwork, which is a good thing because you want that kind of level of detail. But, maybe they're not the most creative, but they're really, really, all obsessed with that detail. So you don't have to be good at drawing. You have to be able to think, being able to join dots as well sometimes, connect things that don't seem related. I think that's a really important skill. And then I would say as well, for anyone who wants to get ahead in communications, whether it's food and drink or otherwise, it's about understanding people and being interested in people, what motivates them and how do people behave and what do they like. And, I remember at uni, because as I said, I did a sort of advertising based degree, which is quite fun. But one of our lecturers said, when you're at the supermarket, just look at what people put in their baskets. Look at what, obviously people get really upset about stereotypes, but they do help in marketing sometimes. So when you're looking at people and you're thinking, what kind of person is that? Why have they done this? And why have they done that? And being curious, and wanting to understand why stuff happens. Those are all really, really phenomenal skills for communication, because often the brief you get is not the real brief. That the information you get is not always the best information. It's about how you probe that, how you investigate, where you take that can get you the best outcomes, and then being able again to connect that with what people want and how people behave. So I think that's where it gets really fascinating. So being interested in people and asking why is another core skill.
So Sophie, that's a good question for you as well, really, because Alex was talking about creativity, which I think also means about experimentation and the willingness to take risks. Even now, I always think that you need to take risks with words. You know, I'm writing something and I'm thinking, oh, I've heard this 100 times before. You've actually got to do something that takes you out of your linguistic comfort zone sometimes. And do you think that willingness to take risks, to be experimental, to not be worried about failure is an important skill when you're trying to find what is the best way to communicate something about food?
Yeah, I think, you know, with everything, I think, you know, you only learn, you know, you learn by failing a lot of the time. So especially with the communications campaigns I work on at Givaudan, we're always thinking of, you know, new ways to communicate things. You know, we don't want it to be the same every time. We don't want to do what everyone else is doing, just the same, you know, just doing one kind of messaging on social media. Like, I think it's really important to, you know, with trial and error, to try different platforms and different communication tactics. I think not being scared to just, you know, have maybe a silly idea, because maybe they'll say, oh, that's a silly idea. Or maybe that'll
Roundtree's randoms.
Roundtree's randoms. Or maybe it'll be the best idea you've had and one of the most successful communication campaigns. So I think it's, you know, obviously, like with companies, you do have to, you know, stay within certain messaging. But I think you definitely, experimenting is a really important part of that job, especially with words.
Yeah.
And what Alex said too, you really have to be a people person to work in communications, from my point of view, because, you know, you work with people, in most jobs you work with people every day, but it's a really collaborative job. It's lots of brainstorming, working with lots of different stakeholders. If you want to work in the communications in the food industry, I would say that, you know, being a people person is a really good skill to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about the future. Alex, what's next for you? What should we be looking out for from the collaborators in the near future?
Well, the exciting thing for the collaborators is that the seed fund will be kicking off again in the new year. So that's really exciting, because so much about the seed fund that makes it special is the face-to-face, the mentoring, the getting together, and for the kind of finalists, the little network they create amongst themselves. And so we haven't done it this last 18 months because of obvious reasons, and it's just a format that didn't work so well, you know, virtually. So we're really excited. The seed fund's kicking off again. I think it'll be open for entries in January. So if anyone has a budding food business, look out, follow us on Instagram, and that will be announced on there. And then I think for us, you know, we have always got a steady stream of exciting new work that's in the offing. So the exciting thing is actually there's a lot of more sustainable clients we're working with, you know, plant-based brands. So we've got some really, really good launches coming out.
And if anyone's interested in the seed fund, it's theseedfund.co.uk. Okay, Sophie, what about you? Any upcoming products that you can tell us about, or is everything under wraps at the moment?
Yeah, I can't tell you anything that's coming, but I can tell you about something that we've just launched. So this might be interesting to Alex. We actually just launched a mindful drinking campaign, and it's called Mindful Moments by Givaudan. And it's a campaign focused on low and no alcohol beverages, with a strong focus on consumer insights and what consumers are looking for in the low and no alcohol space. It's not just your standard, like, you know, standard, you know, soft drinks for adults. It's really elevated, like including low and no spirits, a low and no cocktail you might have at a dinner party, or there's a lot, you know. It's a really, really cool campaign. It's a very creative communication campaign, working with you know, our regional innovation team and with the creative team. We had some great content, such as like some beautiful concept photos. We had a bartender recreate our mindful cocktails and mindful drinks. So that was something that we've just launched now. You might see it on our Givaudan LinkedIn page. You'll see some really cool mindful drinking videos.
It's a really exciting area as well, isn't it? Well, I think we should draw it to close there. We could yak on forever. But Sophie Kaplan and Alex Reary, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts, in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food security to editions with diet experts like Professor James Betts. Recent highlights include editions on Singapore's food tech scene and how net zero could just be a distraction. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatterslive.com. Thank you so much for listening.